And the list of losses goes on and on, and on and on, and on and on. My father warned me, don't go near seashore. There is horror you cannot bear. Of course, I didn't listen to him. 70 tons of dead fish, no sign of life. I see my reflection in their rotting eyes. I wear indescribable stinks of their intoxicated flesh. I can hardly breathe. Chest pain, wet cheeks. But Father, if I don't witness this, where my blind sight would take me? In October 2019, 39 people were found dead in the back of a lorry in Essex. They died in suffocation whilst trying to cross the UK border illegally. The Home Office and the media quickly agreed to condemn people smugglers as a cause of this tragedy. However, the mainstream narratives around this incident did not acknowledge most victims are from two fishing villages in Vietnam, where the marine ecosystem is completely destroyed. The multinational steel corporate directly dumped their toxic waste into the ocean. Fishing became impossible. Tourism quickly died out. Most people in these two villages lost their livelihood and became people smugglers' targets. Desperate young people decided to take a risk to help their families survive and follow their dreams. The youngest victim was only 15 years old. When Franz Fanon says, "I enter the list," I immediately think of death. Death of all kinds of lives. And of course, death of stories. Adrienne Murray Brown says, "Grief is not linear, and it is everywhere." If grief is everywhere, they must be connected, here and there. I have been looking for these dots. God, angels, humans, animals, plants, minerals. God, angels, humans, animals, plants, minerals. God, angels, humans, animals, plants, minerals. The great chain of being in this medieval order of the world. Everything descends from God. Carl Linnaeus, a revered botanical scientist, spent his whole life refining the taxonomic system for nature. First, he removed the spiritual sphere from the world of science. Without God, without angels, the hierarchy of his science kingdom descends from a very specific human variety, Europaeus albus, white European, along with subracial species of red Americana, Tony Asiana, and Black Africana. The white European became the equation to God. Since then, the world has had to follow their order and serve them. In 1872, Japan, the Meiji Emperor ingested meat in public as part of the New Year's celebration. Proposing the West as the cultural superior, Westernization was accelerated in the Meiji era, including the ambition of transforming Asian bodies into Western ones. This transformation wasn't just about cutting hair short and changing into the Victorian attires, but also about everyday diet. Meat-centered Western food consumption was declared as a national benefit. In times, meat eating was a social taboo. It was a forceful institutional gesture. I imagine myself as one of the spectators, quietly witnessing my emperor chewing the red meat and dismissing 900 years old social taboo. I foresee the forests are getting wiped out, the slaughtering of trees and floras and species inhabiting them. In every bite of the emperor, I feel the blood filling up in my mouth, the taste of westernization, the taste of great empire. I feel sick. When you become a widow, you see widows everywhere. When you lament, the ghost becomes no longer a stranger. Every loss directs us to all other worlds coexisting. They are beyond our eyes, beyond the Latin alphabets. History might select a few, but the story needs all of us. The story not from your head, but your belly. The field was full of bright yellow spots, a calling from dandelions. I imagined a bitter salad, tea and liquor containing mineral goodness. I imagined my hands touching the wet soil, tightly cuddling around the dandelion roots. I thought of my mother. She always managed to forage something, regardless of the season, whenever we go to the mountain together. I started digging up to harvest a few dandelions. But soon, a man with angst approached me. "Excuse me, I'm the keeper of this garden. What are you doing here?" "I'm just harvesting a few dandelions." The man started raising his voice. "Can you not see you are irritating the landscape? There was nothing here before I came. I secured the funding and have been working hard to create and protect this ecosystem. And now you are destroying it." I was frightened and quickly hid my dirty hands and dandelions behind my back. "Sorry, I didn't know." At that moment, it wasn't just the scolding man who upset me. The whole situation must have been comic to these dandelions, as I heard them laughing and giggling and saying, "Who protects whom? Did he just say nothing was here before he came?" I wished it wasn't just me who could hear the dandelion voices. I wished that the man could understand the land he is standing on is beyond his capacity of protection or destruction, and certainly beyond the funding schemes for conservation. In 2014, the elders of Sampyeongri, a small farming village in Korea, gathered around their shaman tree. The purpose of this gathering is to call for protesting against the government plan to install the high-pressure transmission towers across their spiritual land. Two towers were scheduled to be built in this village, one in the Noin Mountain, where the community rituals are often held, and the other just behind this shaman tree. The construction for the first tower launched already with a series of explosions that upset the spiritual mountain. A few days later, the village suffered from the excessive amount of hail. It damaged all the orchards and onion fields. In that year, farmers' income declined to almost zero. The elders see it as a curse. Without funded scientific research and all those complicated numbers, the elders just know this is the result of ecological disruption and humans' arrogance and exploitation towards nature. The villagers are asking the mountain for forgiveness and praying to the tree for protection from further destructive progression. Clearly, our elders' trust is not on the state authority, but on their ancestral tree and mountain who came to this world before them. The grandmothers recognize the importance of forming interspecies solidarity, calling not only humans, but also all spirits of nature. Anna Singh in her book, The Mushroom at the End of the World, says that gathering becomes happening when the self starts getting contaminated by the others, the indeterminate moment of self and other transformation. The elders were trying to shape their transformative moment by blurring not only self and other, but also humans and non-humans, the material and the spiritual. And I'm here with a list that is almost never ending. I beg you not to give up reading every name on it.